So while I'm doing this, Kamal, if you want to go ahead and unmute yourself or get yourself ready, we'll be queuing you up here in just a second. I see you right there. Hey, Kamal, can you hear me?
Hey, I'm a little scared of what you got for my bio.
What? Oh, no.
That's actually pretty good. I like it. That's simple enough.
Okay. I'm sure we pulled this off of one of your websites. So
yeah, yeah. I think we pulled it off of what you had already submitted to us or something, maybe. I'm not sure.
I have an old blog that some conference, a hedge fund conference that I spoke at, they pulled my bio from that blog, and the blog talked about, like, I was joking around. I was like, down to like some really non-PC stuff, Ben. And they read that out loud before I go on stage in front of these hedge funds. I'm like, oh my God.
Kamal, like, I read that last night. I saw that and I was like, oh, I'm not going to say that.
Yeah.
Well, as I introduce Kamal, first and foremost, he's a dear friend of mine. I met Kamal inside of the mastermind that I'm a part of called War Room, put together by Scalable.co, formerly known as Digital Marketer. I met Kamal through them about, gosh, a little over 4 years ago. This is when he was releasing his new book, Rebirth, which is a wonderful, wonderful book. It's fiction. I don't typically read fiction. It's based upon a little bit of some real stuff happening in Kamal's life that happened. But I read that book and bought a bunch of them and gave them away because I really wanted to help Kamal. And number two, it's just a wonderful read. And then last year, he did his second rendition of Love Yourself, Like Your Life Depends Upon It, and did the same thing right there. Most of you, or a lot of you, got copies of that book. It's very, just an amazing resource. But first and foremost, Kamal's a friend of mine, right? And so I can't really say nice things about him because that's not what friends do. But I'm going to have to because we're in a professional setting right here. But Kamal has got a just a head upon him that's like nobody else's. And Kamal, you know exactly what I mean right there. Just your being able to write fiction, being able to be in the VC world, and VC stands for venture capital, being able to talk about cryptocurrency, we're going to talk about today. That's a rare breed that somebody is left and right brained like that. You don't meet too many people who can be a success in one or the other, right? I can't draw a straight line with a ruler, right? But Kamal seems to be able to play on both sides of the brain. I don't know how you do that. But as it says right here, Kamal is the author of Love Yourself, Like Your Life Depends on It. Great book. He's meditated with monks in the Himalayas, served as a U.S. Army infantry soldier, and co-founded several companies and a venture capital firm in Silicon Valley. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome Kamal Ravikant.
Thank you, Ben. Well, that's a heck of an intro. I hope to live up to it, man.
Yes. Well, you must. Okay. So we want to make
must.
Sure.
That, I know.
I want to build up expectations to where they're just beyond belief. But before we kind of get into, because really what we want to talk about today is crypto. And as Kamal and I were speaking over the course of the last couple of weeks, I said, hey, let's pretend that we're in a bar. And we sat down to have a beer together, and I don't know a thing about cryptocurrency, and I want you to just kind of download your knowledge about that, because in the context of these bookkeeping professionals, you're going to see business owners transitioning over to this. It's not going to be wholesale, but you're going to see this coming up. And guess what? One of the key components of being a digital bookkeeping professional is that you are up to date on things that are especially technology related. And a cryptocurrency is that. So really, just this conversation, I want to have it just it's pretty informal. We're just going to talk about cryptocurrency. But Kamal, before we get there, like, walk me through how in the world you're a part of the VC world as well as a best-selling author in fiction. How does that work?
It doesn't, man. It's the most convoluted path you can think of. You know, I was a soldier in the U.S. Army, and after that, I went to college, University of Rochester, upstate New York, studied economics and biology, nothing to do with VC world or tech. But I just happened to, I was actually going to go to med school. That's what I was starting to do. And then the dot-com boom was happening, and my brother was doing quite, had started a company. He was like, look, man, this is the new gold rush. We could literally create a future. This is the mid-late 90s. He's like, we're literally creating the future. You have no idea what we're building. Like, this is going to be the future. Come out here and like, build the future. And so I bought a one-way ticket, went out there, and jumped in, got involved with the company, helped build that. That company went public, got to experience that big write up, and then also like the crash where your stock options end up being worthless, where you were, you know, where you end up owing, you walked away with just like, I was lucky I broke even, I think. But a great education. We were literally building stuff that I never built before. It was the beginning of like the big internet companies. And we would just like figure it out. There was no one had done this before. And it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of work. And I was hooked. So I just stayed, stuck around and, you know, consulted for some big Fortune 100s, you know, teaching them internet strategy. And then, but then came back to startups. That's where my heart was. It just, entrepreneurs is where my heart is. As far as business goes, that's where my heart is. Like just people, individuals who set out to solve problems, and then they solve it for one person, then they solve for 10 people, then 100, then 1,000, 100,000, 1,000,000, 10 million, a billion. I've seen it happen so many times. It's my, like, I can't think of a better ecosystem to be involved in and support. So did that. And then what happens in the Silicon Valley world is after a while, like, you know, you then start backing your friends and you back them with money and resources and they end up doing well. And you get, you know, because you back them with money, you own a little piece of what they built and they're making money. And that's basically venture capital, except that's angel investing. Venture capital is when you do with other people's money. And so the next level is you do with other people's money. And I did that. I started my first fund in 2012 and it did really well. I think I'm currently on track to return 8 times. 8x the investment. So if someone put a dollar, it's that results in $8. You know, that's before my carry. So I think they get like in the end, like $6 or something like that. But it's not bad, right, Ben? I mean, you're the bookkeeper guy. What do you think?
Yeah.
You know, give a dollar, you get $6.
I think that six, if I put in a dollar and get six, I think I'll do that all day long. I think I'll forgo sleep and just put money in that machine. So, yeah.
So I did that. Then I started my second fund actually in November, and that's doing really well, doing the same thing, which is just backing great entrepreneurs. And I've been in the game long enough that you know who's good. You know you make bets, and some of these bets really pay off. That really pay off. Like the, you know, Silicon Valley companies like Uber, you put a 25K in the seed round, they raise your seed round AngelList that resulted in something like $16 or $25 million to the people who did that. You know, that's the kind of returns you get in these things when they work. And so it's a fun game, and I get to talk to smart entrepreneurs building the future. And then, so that's the Silicon Valley tech story. As far as writing goes, look, man, I went through a, you know, I'm pretty honest about it. I went through a very rough childhood. You know, we were single mom, raised us. We were homeless at a point. We raised us at nothing. And books were my refuge. You know, I used to, you know, I lived in a very abusive, very, very tough area. Grew up in a really, excuse my language, but a real shithole. And, you know, we had no money. And, you know, you escaped or you just kind of like got smothered there. And the books were my refuge. And I've always had this passion for books and storytelling. So stories can actually, you know, take you away from wherever you are and actually teach you about life. And, you know, you have someone's life experience and, you know, that they spent years working on writing your hands, encapsulating your hands. It's amazing. So I've always been passionate about books and writing. And then while I was building companies, I was actually studying the craft of writing. At night, I'd be like obsessively taken by Hemingway and the greats and seeing how they did what they did in writing and rewriting and correcting rejection letters until they got better and better until one day, you know, like now the publishers want me. And so I've published a couple of books, you know, and you've been very kind and supportive, especially with the last one, Love Yourself, that you send copies to your customers. And it's a very special book. And the funny thing is, it's a self-help book, but I'm not a self-help writer. I go out of my way to tell people, look, this is a book written by a guy who's not a self-help guy, which is why it works. Because I'm not doing this to sell you a coaching program. I have no products. I have no nothing on the back end. It's a book that's designed to share how one man changes inside in a way that anyone can. And it works. So I'm very, very proud of the work I've done as a writer. You know, the emails I get every day from people are very gratifying about how my books are changing their lives. So I get to, and what's funny now is with venture capital and my my writing essay coincide. Because sometimes, often, I'll want to invest in a company, and I'll talk to the CEO, and he'll be like, "Oh yeah, your book really changed my life. I would love to have you on." I'll talk to an investor, they're like, "Oh my God, I have your book in my bookshelf right now. I can't believe I'm talking to you. I want to be an investor in your fund." Kind of funny. I never imagined that, but they kind of both come together there that way. So that's it so far.
Gotcha. Now, Rebirth. So for everybody out there, this is a book that Kamal wrote, and this is a, it's fiction, right? Sort of ish.
Based on my life. It's a beautiful story.
Yeah. So just kind of give us the 1 minute summary of this book, and I just love it, but kind of what it's about.
Thank you. It's a book that takes place in Spain on the Camino de Santiago, which is an 11th century pilgrim route in Spain that I ended up walking when I was 25 after my dad died. And I was struggling and trying to figure out a lot of things in life, and also struggling with his death and a lot of unresolved issues, you know, often the father and son story. And when I walked this pilgrimage for, I think, 37 days, and the people I met along the way, you know, just shared so much wisdom with me. And so when I came back, I knew over the years, I knew I had a story to tell about that experience. And I just had to become a good enough writer to be able to tell it correctly, which is one of the reasons I worked in the craft of writing, because when you really care about something, you want to be good enough at it to give it your best shot. And so it's a story about this guy walking the Camino de Santiago after his father dies, and the people that meets along the way, and what they share with him and what they teach him about life. And it's ultimately a story about forgiveness. You know, I write about human concepts, the stuff that's, you know, really affects all of us. You know, like, it's funny, I get fan emails from far left to far right across the whole gamut, because I write about the human condition. We're all humans, you know? Whatever we believe, we're still human beings. We're still dealing with the same monkey in the head. Yeah.
Absolutely. You talking about far left, far right, you know, one time we were texting, you're like, "Yeah, I'm going on Glenn Beck's show tomorrow." And then a couple of weeks later, you're on somebody that's at the opposite end of the spectrum of Glenn Beck. But it's pretty crazy. So,
yeah, they talk about my books, you know, and that's actually, I really like that, because look, I'm from originally, you know, I've spent enough time in California, I consider myself a Californian. So you can see where some of my politics go, but I was also in the U.S. Army. I put my, you know, I served, you know, I'm proud of it, you know, so it's like, I want people also, one of the reasons I like to go into shows, I want people to understand that America is not just black or white, you know, metaphorically, right? We're complex creatures, each of us, you know, you can be in the Army and still want to feel this way and all this other stuff, you know, like so I really love doing that kind of stuff to just show, like the complex structure of an American.
Absolutely. Well, that's a great segue, talking about a complex structure.
Currency, right?
Yeah, of going into cryptocurrency. Before we actually talk about it, I want people to understand, like, why do we need to be talking about this? Because if you listen to my dad, you know, who's 75 years old, he'll be 75 this year, he's like, why do I need maybe some cryptocurrency? You know, I mean, this is just something that's a fad. It's just something. So first and foremost, why talk about cryptocurrency?
Well, look, it's like in 1999, you're saying, why do I need to talk about, why do I need to talk about the internet? It's a fad. I remember people saying that, right? And there's been a certain evolution of technology when we go to connectedness. There was first the internet. And what did the internet create? I mean, it created massive companies, Amazon, eBay, Facebook, Google, you know, in fact, the biggest companies in the stock market are now all tech companies that exist purely because of the internet. They couldn't exist without it. Then the second revolution was in mobile, when the iPhone came out and now you had the internet in your pocket, and also these app companies came about. And these app companies are, Instagram's not going away. Like, look at the apps on your phone. Some of these are worth billions and billions of dollars. A huge generational wealth has been created that. The next step, this is the most powerful one actually, is cryptocurrency, because it's not just is just as transformative as the internet was technologically and also philosophically, but it's also connected to money. And when you connect things to money, it's basically, if you want to say it, it's the internet of money. And no one can, no single individual or government can, depending on the cryptocurrency, can control it. Now, when we talk about cryptocurrency, I'll tell you right out, like, be careful. 99% of those, at least in 2017, I would say were scams, outright scams. That's what happens if something takes off. You know, like, remember the first dot-com boom? You know, some of those companies that saw shut up in the stock market, they were complete duds. In the crash, they went away. But at the same time, remember, that's when Google was built. That's when Facebook was built. That's when a lot of, you know, that's when Amazon really started to grow. So cryptocurrencies is basically, could not exist without the internet, but it's a way to actually decentralize it so that currently things are centralized. Like Amazon is a centralized platform that Jeff Bezos and his shareholders control. Now, a decentralized currency, no one controls, but the only people who control the people who own the tokens of it. And depending on the currency, you know, it's pretty, pretty spread out. Now, I would say when talking about cryptocurrency, especially in bookkeeping, I would focus on the very top ones, the ones that are getting pretty legitimized. The rest would be a nightmare. You know, it's the tax laws also for this are still pretty up in the air. Usually, I think whenever if I buy Bitcoin, if I buy Ethereum using Bitcoin, that's a taxable event, which is really strange when it shouldn't be, because it doesn't work that way with stocks or real estate or anything like that. So it gets complicated. But so I would just stick with the very, very top and talk about those. But do remember, pretty much most cryptocurrencies are, you know, were scams. And I think a lot of them left are still, may not be around in a few years from now. It's a very fast, very rapidly evolving market and technology. And there's so much money involved. There's such stupid amounts of money involved, way more than the internet was originally being built, that everyone's jumping in. Also, it's global. No one controls it. It's 24/7. It's global. You know, you could be you could be in China and mining Bitcoin or trading in Bitcoin 24/7 versus here. So there is no, at least, no overt governmental control that we know of in these things.
Okay.
So I know it was rambling, so maybe you want to ask me more specific questions, because that's the problem. You know, it's such a big topic. It's like, hey, come on, explain the internet.
Yeah, and I do plan to drill down here. I want to kind of get with a very basic question. Please explain the difference to us. What cryptocurrency versus Bitcoin? You know, are those two terms interchangeable, or are they something different? How do they relate?
Bitcoin is a cryptocurrency. Bitcoin is the OG. It's the original cryptocurrency. It's why it's the one that started it all, which is why I think it's become the most powerful, the most widely accepted one, because it was the very first one. And what it did was it showed that. If you were to explain Bitcoin, basically, you know how, using bookkeeping terms, you know how, like in human history, when you transact something, if you and I, if a society has transactions, if you have people buying and selling from each other, taking loans or anything, you need a middleman, a middle person to keep the records. For example, if I send you a check, in the middle is the bank that makes sure that I have the money in my account before it is sent to you. It's not like I send you a check and I don't have the money in my account and the bank gives you the money anyway. Then, you know, there's a middleman. There's always an accounting ledger in the middle that someone controls, some middleman that we've trusted, whether it's the bank, whether it's Visa, whether it's the government. Someone in the middle makes sure that if I send you money from my account, there's actual money in my account that then they say, okay, we're going to give to you. What Bitcoin did was it used the power of the internet to say, like, wait a minute, you don't need one middleman. What you do is you real time update the accounting ledger, and anyone can have the accounting ledger. Anyone who has, like, anyone can download the Bitcoin node and know up to date the whole history of every single Bitcoin that's been minted. And and the transaction. So I can't, so you can't, so the double spend problem goes away because everyone's got the ledger and they have to agree. And it's all done over the internet. It's all done by the code. So that's what changed the game, that there was no middleman needed. So that's why they call it decentralized. Centralized means you need a middle institution, you need a middle person. Decentralized means everyone's got the ledger, everyone's ledger's updated, so you can't cheat. And it's a whole new paradigm shift in basically accounting. And when you can do that, it changes the game, because then you don't need the institutions. You don't need Visa in the middle. You don't need to send each other money. I can send you Bitcoin right now to your Bitcoin address, and the bookkeeping that everybody's got will be updated with that transaction. And there's no way to like double spend, and there's no middleman. And so it reduces the friction. The SWIFT network that we use, to send money, the ACH, wires, all that, it just removes it. You just can do direct to direct. It's game changing if you think about it. And I'm sure, I'm throwing a lot of things out there, but in the end, what it is Bitcoin is a cryptocurrency. It's the original cryptocurrency. And because it's the original one, it's been around for years, and there's enough people who hold it, and it's got the legitimacy that it is the one. It is the one that everybody knows of.
Okay, so Coke is
the most valuable one.
Yeah. So Coke is a soda. Bitcoin is a cryptocurrency.
Bingo. Great way to put it.
Okay. See, you have to get it to real simple terms for this Arkansas boy. Okay. So
all right.
If I can draw it with a crayon, then we're going somewhere with it. So I can see that. I could draw a Coke can and now understand that. So there's more than just Bitcoin, right? You said, hey, you need to focus on the ones that are the most prevalent. Obviously, Bitcoin is the 800-pound gorilla in the room. Mm-hmm. As we are looking at this, either to invest in our personal lives or to use as a currency or whatever, our clients, are there any others that are out there that we should take note of, that we should watch?
The top, just stick with the top two right now. That's what most of your clients, if they start to get into it, will be focused on, which is Bitcoin and Ethereum. Those are the top two. And I would just stick with those. You see right now institutions starting to buy cryptocurrency on all the institutions, when at least publicly what they're saying is they're buying Bitcoin. Bitcoin's going to become the legitimate one. There's so much money flowing into it. There's so many like billion-dollar funds getting into it and just buying and buying. And there's a limited supply. That's one of the things also that makes it very interesting. Bitcoin, they can only be over 21 million Bitcoin. You can't mint more. So you can't deflate it away like you can the US dollar. So everyone scrambled to get some. Like people used to be able to buy for a fraction of a penny. Now a Bitcoin is, I don't know, what is it, 30-something thousand. A lot of people expect it to be six figures within a couple of years. And I would not buy it to use it. Consider Bitcoin as, the way to look at Bitcoin is digital gold. If you want to buy an asset that's uncorrelated to stocks, that you can buy and hold and hope and expect it, to go up over time. That's why people buy with gold, as a store of value. That's the same reason people are buying Bitcoin now, as a store of value that they expect to go up over time. And then eventually it'll sell it for US dollars.
Okay. So just to be clear, I want to make sure everybody heard that. Bitcoin is the big one. And then the number two is Ethereum. I think that's Etherium.
Etherium. Yeah, yep. You put in Google autocorrect it for you.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, REUM. I'm looking at it right here on my coin list account, which we'll talk about here in just a minute. It's funny because Kamal and I pretty much had this conversation about 2 months ago. In mid-December, I called him up and said, "Hey, dude, I got to do something with this crypto. What do I do?" So I'm not too far ahead of where everybody else is. I know some people here are way ahead of me when it comes to cryptocurrency. But so let's say that as an individual, I wanted to go out there and buy some Bitcoin or buy some Ethereum. how do you start this process? Do you just go, do I go to Amazon and buy it? How do I do this?
Not yet. Actually, people, I think you can do it on Robinhood and Cash App and stuff, but I wouldn't do it there. What I would do is I would go to either, probably the simplest one is the biggest gorilla exchange is Coinbase. Coinless is more of a Silicon Valley company. It's smaller. It's one I like. But the one that everyone's getting encountered is called Coinbase. And they're probably going to IPO in a couple of months. And you just go there, set up an account. Now, it's harder than setting up, say, an account at Ameritrade or whatever because of KYC laws, just Patriot Act KYC laws. So you have to, you know, send a show photo, like take a photo of your driver's license and all this other stuff. And that's purely because of government regulations. It's nothing to do with the exchanges. And from there, you can buy. Now, one very important thing to remember, people say, oh, Bitcoin's too expensive. I can't buy it. It's $35,000. Well, no, it's like saying $10,000 too expensive. I can't have a dollar. I mean, I can't have it. It's like you can divide a $10,000 into a dollar, you know, buy 10,000 times into 10,000 $1 bills. Same thing. Bitcoin can actually be divided into 8 decimal places. So you can buy $100 worth of Bitcoin. You can buy $500 worth of Bitcoin. Just a whole Bitcoin now is, I think, it's in 30,000. You know, and it changes every day. So I'm, you know, by the time someone listens to it, who knows? So I would say go to Coinbase. Same thing with Ethereum. I think Ethereum was, last I checked, was like 1,200, 1,300. You can buy a fraction of it. You don't have to say, oh, I need that much money to buy it. And do you want to buy it? It depends. If you want to say like, look, I expect these things to go up and this is part of my investment portfolio, then do it. But only do like the high risk portion of your investment portfolio on these. You know, this is higher risk. But it's one that I believe in. So a lot of very smart people believe in. And it's, and when I say believe, not like a religion, but just seeing what's happening, this is not going to go away. It's like the internet. It's not going to go away. It's out the bag. And it, you can't take it back. It's global. It's on the internet. Like there's no way to stop it. So if you're going to do it, I would say go to Coinbase, right? You know, set up an account there and just play with it. Buy a little bit. You know, see what it's like, but don't feel like you have to buy a whole one, whole anything. You can divide these, and you just think of the amount of money you want to spend that invest.
All right. So, just to give you some updates here, Kamal, Bitcoin right now, according to my Coinbase account, is $37,123. Okay. Now, understand that when Bitcoin first came out, it was selling for less than $1.
Oh, it was like a fraction of a penny.
Yeah. So it's gone, let's just say $1 because my brain can't go.
It's probably that. If you had bought it even when it was $1 or $10, it's probably the best investment in the history of mankind.
It is.
You know, there are people who did. There are people who are billionaires when they started with like $1,000.
Yeah. You know? And Ethereum is at 1647. It's up 10% today alone.
Yeah, there's some news that came out. That's the thing. You know, one thing, very important thing to realize with this stuff. Do not buy this to trade. You will lose a lot of sleep and you'll probably lose your money. This stuff swings up down because it's global, because it's driven by news cycles and all that. What you got to do is you buy these for longer terms. Like what is the trend you're betting on? Is this going to grow? Is this going to become more valuable over the next 6 months, next year, next 2 years? Anyone who buys and say, I'm going to trade for and I'm buying and selling next month, you're gambling. You know, it was like, look, it was 40,000 a month ago, you know, and then it went to 32. Now it's up at 37. It swings. If you bought at 40,000, we're planning on selling in a month for 50. You're like kind of like crying. But versus if you bought at 40, just knowing it's going to go up, expecting it to go up to like 100, then you just put it away and wait. Yeah. Now remember, like this is high risk. You know, Bitcoin has, the prices have crashed hard in the past, like 80%. You know, and then risen significantly. But you need, so you, this is the highest, if for your investment portfolio, make it the highest risk part of your investment portfolio. And, and think of Bitcoin, especially as store of value. Like I'm buying digital, a digital gold that's just been recently discovered in men and humankind.
Yeah. Got some questions that are coming in that are really good, and we'll get over those.
Oh, great.
We'll get to those here in just a few minutes. I got a couple more things that I'd like to chat with you about here. Of course, we're not recommending that you do invest in Bitcoin or any cryptocurrency. That's totally
definitely
up
not
to you.
This yeah, is that's really just to share knowledge. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But one thing that you said to me, because I just a full disclosure here, I invested in one of Kamal's funds that he had for cryptocurrency, and you and I were talking, and you made it so simple. I was like, well, how much money should I put in there? And you said, Ben, the amount of money that you would feel comfortable, like knowing that it's probably never going to come back. But if it does, that hey, it will be a hit. But pretend that that's money that is just gone, that you would be comfortable if that happened. You know, so for some people that's 10 bucks, for some people that's no bucks, for some people that's $25,000, right? But I really thought that was sage advice, you know, that you wouldn't feel like if you were going to Vegas and you put it down, you lost that money, you'd be like, okay, that wasn't fun, but I lost it. I could have won a lot, but I think that's real sage advice there when it comes to cryptocurrency. At least it was for me.
No, thanks, man. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because look, investing, the best investors are people investing what they know. There's also, yeah, you know, you can get lucky. Well, then, you know, and things that you think may work, but you don't know well, that case only use the very, very riskiest part of your portfolio they're willing to lose.
Yeah. So you mentioned that there are only 21 million Bitcoins available, right?
No, right now I think it's something like 16 or 17. That there's a whole process where they're minted using computers. And the more that they're minted, the harder it gets to mint them. So it takes longer and longer. And each one requires way more power, and computational power is just way more expensive. But by the time it's done, it'll be a total of 21 million. And one thing most people don't realize is, that's about currently of the existing supply, let's say if it's 17 million, I think 5 or 6 have been lost over time. So people didn't realize, people didn't expect it to be worth a lot, you know? It was in a computer, it was like the computer's thrown away in a trash heap somewhere, whatever, you know, like there's some news stories that some guy who was like hundreds of millions worth of Bitcoin in a computer he threw away, and he started like just digging through the landfill, you know, trying to find the computer.
I would be too. So,
yeah. So it's actually less than that. So that's a one very interesting thing about it. There is a fixed supply, whereas that's one of the reasons why a lot of people like it, because there is no fixed supply of money. And it's almost like these days, you know, the government punishes you for saving money because it just keeps on printing more. So the value of your money goes down. You know, so if you're a saver, you know, your spending power is going down on what you're saving. So that's one of the reasons why people globally like this, because no government can inflate this away. It's fixed. There's a fixed amount.
I want to come back to that, but you mentioned something there. Mm-hmm. You said no government can take this away. So I've read
government
articles.
Government can take anything away. They have tanks and they have guns.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's one of the things I want to chat about, because, you know, Warren Buffett has been somebody that I wouldn't say is opposed to it, but he kind of is what you're talking about. He doesn't understand it, so therefore he doesn't invest in it. But
he's
is
very
it conceivable?
That way.
Yeah. Is it conceivable that the government could step in and say, no more Bitcoin?
They can't say no more Bitcoin. They can stop it. It's global, but they can say US holders, you have to turn over your Bitcoin. Didn't they do that with gold at one point?
Yes.
In the US? They can do the same exact thing, right?
Yeah. It was illegal to hold, this was back, I believe, in Roosevelt's time, it was illegal to hold gold as an investment.
So they can do the same thing. Yeah.
Okay.
That is a black swan event that could happen. And, you know, that's why I actually like seeing all this Wall Street money coming in almost makes me, normally I'm not a fan of Wall Street. I just think they're just mooches on the system. But seeing them put this much money into Bitcoin, these big funds, actually I think is good for the viability of Bitcoin. Because let's be honest, who owns the lobbyists and who do the lobbyists own? You know, I mean, our politics is, you know, just lobbyists, you know, politicians spending their lobbyists, and the lobbyists are with people of money. And if people of money are buying Bitcoin, it's more likely to survive.
Yep. Yeah, some good questions here. Kim said that the U.S. government confiscated gold, so how can you be certain on this? You can't. There is no certainty on this. So again, the risk is pretty high on the scale. But again, looking at an investment that was less than a dollar that is now $37,000 and has been as high as 41, I believe. That's one of those things where, you know, hey, if it pays off, great. If it doesn't, then, you know, you lost that certain amount of money that you were okay with losing in there. Okay, so like, who started Bitcoin and who was the one that said only 21 million coins can be mined? Who did that?
It's a pseudonym. No one knows who this person is. And it's the way they wrote the code. It's in the code, and the code is open source. So anyone can, and it's been tested and looked at by so many people. It's in the code. The code, the thing that actually creates the whole Bitcoin network, is in the code. And so it was in there. And whoever started it did it right after the 2008 crisis, where the banks were bailed out. And so, you know, the person said, this is ridiculous. And let's assume it's a person. It could be a pseudonym for a group of people. Said, this is the greatest tragedy, stealing from the poor, giving to the rich who fucked it all up and bailing them out. We need a monetary system that the governments can't do that with. And so I'm starting this and put it out. And originally it was just like really hardcore techie people. I was like, oh my God, this is, it was just the concept of decentralized currency was a game changer. Were really into it. So a lot of, in the beginning, the people who got it were just people who were curious and was like, wow, this is a great experiment. And then just started to spread and spread. It took years. It took years, and it had lots of crashes and falls. In the beginning, you had to be a techie to be able to get it. There were no exchanges or nothing. You had to mine it yourself with your computer. And no one knows who this person is. Like, you know, there's all sorts of like thoughts. It could be like some cyberpunk. It could be some like, there's thoughts about certain people in Silicon Valley. Some people say, heck, it was the CIA. It was the NSA. No one knows. It makes it even more interesting. It's just open, but there's nothing closed in it that to hide. All the code is open. All the network is open. It's decentralized. It makes it the first time in human history something like that has happened.
Before we go to the questions here, I do want to talk with you about security of Bitcoin, because that is a huge, huge thing. If you hold Bitcoin the wrong way, it can fall into hands pretty easily. Is that a true statement? Would you agree?
Yeah, like for example, if someone hacks in your Coinbase account and sends your Bitcoin out to their address, you can't get it back. It's not like there is no back. Once it's gone, it's a network. There's decentralized. There's no authority controlling it saying, oh, that was fraud, send it back. So remember, you have to keep your security high with these things. If you lose it, you lose it. Or if you put it on a disk drive, you put your key, Bitcoin key, on a disk drive and you put it away and your disk drive fails, it's gone. You lost your key. Like, you know, you can create fail safes, but like there's no, oh, I get texts from friends all the time. Hey, could you help my buddy out? He owned like 2 million Bitcoin on this drive and he lost a drive or this. And I'm like, you know, like that, it's gone. It's basically what it is you're given a key on the network that said, if you have that key, you can say you can access it. But if you don't have the key, you can't. So, and if someone else gets the key, they can move it to their key. I'm like oversimplifying things, but that's kind of like how it is. So the key, so to answer your question, yeah, if you lose it or if someone else gets it, it's gone.
Yep. Again, high risk that is out there. But obviously there are things you can do to mitigate it. One thing I would like to refer everybody to, number one is just your podcast in general, Curious Kamal.
Thank you.
It's a great podcast. Again, it's Curious Kamal. It's Kamal. But there is a episode that you did that you referred me to, which answered a lot of questions, and it kind of went a little bit deeper on security. I don't think that you can go deep enough when it comes to security, but, that episode aired in what, December?
Which one, the Bitcoin or the hacking one?
The Bitcoin one.
Yeah, that was in December. I called up one of the smartest guys in the space who's been in it since I think Bitcoin was like $100, and really smart guy, and called it Bitcoin for Dummies. I was like, let's answer questions that the average person has. Not like, I've seen most of these podcasts, they're proselytizing, you know. I was like, let's just have an honest conversation about it and answer questions that I was actually the weekend before I was explaining Bitcoin to a friend of mine who's in the 70s. I was like, I want to send this to him and it'll answer his questions.
Yeah. I found it to be a wonderful resource. So you, everybody, to get a little bit deeper than what we went to today, this is not a simple subject, right? It is something that you can, I mean, Kamal, you dedicate a good portion of your life to understanding this, right?
Not my life, but enough, you know, yeah. Enough to know that, you know, one thing I've learned is I don't like when I meet really smart or very successful people, I don't know, you know, as I get to know them, I never ask them, what should I do with my money? Or what should someone do with their money? I always ask them, what are you doing with your money? You know, it's that's where you find where things get interesting. And I'm finding more and more smarter people are just moving money into Bitcoin. And when I saw that, I started getting interested. And obviously, I'm from the tech world. There's many friends of mine, many people I know were in it early. And so they were talking about it back then. But back then, honestly, I was poo-pooing it. I was like, this is too techy. This is not going to go mainstream. I was wrong. But as I learned, you know, once you realize you're wrong, then you quickly change position when you know that you're wrong. By the way, that episode, it starts off a little technical for the first 5 minutes. Don't let that scare you. The guy got a little technical and I quickly brought it back. And it's actually meant to be helpful. So whoever listens to it, it will help you.
Yeah. Yeah, and you mentioned another podcast that you did on security that I listened to, and this is not just about Bitcoin. It's not just about crypto. It's more just protecting yourself online. And some of the analogies that he gave of the scale, the 1 to 10, I just recommend it for everybody here, especially since we are digital bookkeepers, and not only are we concerned with our privacy, we're also the wards of all of our clients' privacy as well. So
that was
priceless episode. So again, check out that podcast, Curious Kamal.
Do
you have a website?
Go to curiouskamal.com. It'll redirect to like episode descriptions.
Okay.
But yeah, that episode was called How to Not Get Hacked. And that's a very good one because to not get hacked is actually more of a mindset you have to take. It's not about what technology you use. And so that was actually really, it's a really good one. I highly recommend everyone listen to it. I learned there. And it really is anyone who's online should be. It's surprising how many people think they're not targets, but they really are. They should listen to it. It just, once you do it, you'll be safer.
Okay. A couple of questions here. We got about 5 minutes left. So Sharon asks, hey, I just went to Coinbase and they want my date of birth, social security number and address, all of it. Are they really secure?
They're about as secure as an exchange gets. And they're about to go public. They're about to IPO, so there's going to be a lot of eyes on them. All the crypto exchanges will want this. It's not because of the crypto exchange, because of the KYC laws. They have to. They're regulated very tightly because the government looks at this as a way to launder money. You know, and so... So they keep a tight attention on it. They'll want, like, I think the one I use, like, wants, like, a photo of me holding my license next to my face and all that other stuff. That you'll get that with any crypto exchange.
Well, once you get your license back, that'll be possible. So there's another reason. JK. Okay. So, yeah, Sharon, that's the one. I went through that one and they did that. And then afterwards, they even required me, like Kamal mentioned, to send a copy of my driver's license. So, yep, that is in there. Of course, everything.
They do it like where you just hold it up to your camera on your phone or your computer. You don't have to send it in.
Yeah. Because Amy mentioned, talk about the 10 keywords to a wallet. We don't really have enough time to go into that, but. Talking about the importance of having backups of your keywords, having backups of your key, mm-hmm. securing your account. There's a lot of stuff that's in there. And so we don't have time, unfortunately, to go into that today, but it's super, super critical that you have all your
documents. Look, if people are interested, we'll do another one. We can go collect the questions or we can just do another one, answer those questions. Happy to.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Yeah. Maria asks, if the ledger is universal and everyone sees the ledger updated, then how is it lost on a computer? Is it in a sense a physical item and therefore can be thrown away in a landfill, not a virtual item? So it's a great question.
That's a great question.
Yeah. So
no, it's basically you have an address.
you give an address, like, this is my address on the network, and but no one knows who owns it. Only the only person who has the key that unlocks that address, and you have your key, which is just a string of characters and numbers. So if you lose that, there's no way to access it. It's the key, it's the numbers. It's like a digital key that you lose.
It reminds me of that movie War Games, which I recently rewatched. And at the very beginning of it, the premise is, if, for those of you who are young, this was out in the 80s, Matthew Broderick,
yeah.
Ali Sheedy. It was just, back in the day, it gave me goosebumps because it was kind of scary. Now it's funny to watch. But at the very beginning, they were testing the nuclear system of launching rockets. And you had one, you had two people that were sitting in the missile silos, and both of them had to turn their keys in order to launch the nuclear warhead. And it's the same thing here. It's kind of the same premise. Like, if one key is in and the other key is gone, it's not going to launch. So that's why, you know, one key is held on the side of the cryptocurrency, is the way that I can understand it. Is that kind of a fair assessment?
It's a good enough analogy. It's not fully accurate, but it's a good enough analogy. So the key to remember, like if you do on Coinbase, you don't actually hold your keys. Coinbase holds your keys. You just like, it's an exchange of, so you, versus like if you do it, you can take it off Coinbase and then put it on your computer or your or special drives you can buy purely for crypto, then you hold your key. It's like buying gold from in a company, but the company holds the gold versus you have them send the gold to you and you hold it.
Mm, gotcha.
And look, if you lose your gold, you lose your gold.
Right.
Same thing.
Yep. Kamal, we've come to the end of our time, but I thank you so much for shedding light on cryptocurrency, your life, and it's been a pleasure having you here with us today.
Oh, that was a true pleasure. And look, happy to do this anytime.
All right. Well, how about tomorrow? No, I'm just kidding right there. But thanks, Kamal. Again, if you want to find out more about Kamal, listen to his podcasts. It's very diverse. It's very useful information. Go to CuriousKamal.com. Curious, and then Kamal is K-A-M-A-L. Thanks again, Kamal.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Kamal.
Bye.
All right,
okay.
Kirsten.
Yeah.
Well, I think we're taking a break. Is that what
we're
doing?
It is time for a 10-minute break. So we will be back here at 2:40 Eastern time with Jock, and you're going to interview him about insurance.
Yay.
Hey, and shameless plug, don't forget you can have lunch with Kamal in June. Just saying.
Yeah, I don't know if Kamal even knows that, so he's still on. So I just broke the news to you about the event. So I'll call you on that, buddy. So what? All right. Well, I will see you all back here in about 10 minutes.
Yep, sounds good.